is Jared and the GM on ESPN 102.5 The Game. We're live out at HQ Beer K downtown for the Preds watch party tonight as they take on Detroit. Floyd, the fine folks at ESPN.com have five moves that each AFC South team has to make. So they put together, so for example, the Texans' number one move is use the savings from cutting Brian Cushing to lock up Benardrick McKinney, the linebacker from Mississippi State.
Right.
So, like, they cut Brian Cushing today, and so it goes on and on. The number one thing for the Colts is work on an extension with Rashawn Melvin. The first thing for Jacksonville to do is clear out some cap space, and that takes us to the Titans. So they're not like these monumental. I mean, it's not like number one trade for Antonio Brown, but they are five things that ESPN.com says they need to do. So I'll go through each one, read it out for you, and you give me your take on it.
Okay.
Though I'm sure your five things they need to do are probably different than ESPN's, but we'll just go ahead and we'll do this and see where it goes. Number one, says ESPN.com, pick up Marcus Mariota's fifth-year option. The 2017 season was a step backward for the former second overall selection, but the Titans are counting on new offensive coordinator Matt LaFleur to build a scheme around Mariota's strengths. While John Robinson and new coach Mike Vrabel will be in a bind if Mariota doesn't improve, the Titans are fully invested in their 2015 first-round pick for the foreseeable future. Number one, pick up Marcus Mariota's fifth-year option.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a surprise for anybody. I don't think it's something that, you know, anybody really spent a lot of time contemplating. Sounds to me like it's pretty easy, and I think they have until May.
Yeah.
Have until May to get it done. So I'm sure that that will get done. I'm not concerned about that at all.
Now it's $20 million. So what you're doing is you're basically committing to Mariota not only for – we know Mariota's going to be the quarterback next year. But by picking up the fifth-year option, you're saying he's going to be the quarterback the next year too.
Right.
So if he has another bad year, let's say, and I didn't even think Mariota was that bad. I know you don't like all those metric websites, and I agree with you that they're usually wrong, but somebody had some metric that said that Mariota basically had the worst wide receivers in the NFL. And I can agree with that. And so I don't think Mariota was as bad as people make him out to be, but I also say if he takes a step back with a new offensive coordinator this year and it looks like Andy Dalton or even worse, then you've picked up that fifth-year option, and you'll probably be thinking about getting another quarterback.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, again, I think you have to go back and look at, you know, what have we done with the receivers? And if we have improved the receivers either by coaching or by supplementing the number of receivers we have now, I mean, if you don't do one or the other, it's going to be really hard to grade Marcus even next year.
ESPN.com, second move the Titans need to make in the offseason. Number two, re-sign Josh Klein and make a run at Avery Williamson. By the way, I don't know if making a run at a guy that's already on your team counts as making a run or if it just counts as re-signing both of those guys. But re-sign Josh Klein and make a run at Avery Williamson. The professed strength of the Titans under Mike Mularkey and now retired offensive line coach Russ Grimm was their offensive line. And while most of the investment in that line came at tackle, the Titans found a useful waiver wire claim from the Patriots in Klein. As the Titans continued to try to build Patriots South under their head coach, general manager combo, holding on to Klein as a useful run blocker who won't break the bank makes sense. Williamson might be tougher. The Titans already have Wesley Woodyard signed to a meaningful free agent deal and like what they got out of rookie fifth round pick Jayon Brown, who has more coverage range as a pass defender than Williamson. The 25-year-old Kentucky product is a two-down thumper on the run who came off the field on third downs for Brown, as the four-year veteran took just 44 defensive snaps on third down all season. So they want the Titans to re-sign Williamson and re-sign Klein. Let's start with Williamson and then get to Klein. Your thoughts?
I mean, I think I would make a run at him, but with somebody, actually both these guys, in my mind, you have a budget. And you put in the budget how much you're going to be willing to spend for that guy or for that spot. And you may work your way up to that over a period of time. If they don't want what you're offering, then you need to let them go out and experience the world. And they may come back and say, hey, you know, that offer was pretty good. They may jump out there and get two or three times what you were offering them. But doesn't mean that they were right and you were wrong. You know, I mean, there's just somebody, there'll be somebody out there to look at Williamson and say, hey, he is really, really a good player, and I want to bring him in as a first-down player, and I'm willing to pay him, you know, $1 million more than the Titans are willing to pay him.
Yeah, like you with Jonathan Cyprian. Like, they signed Cyprian to a free agent contract. Cyprian's horrible. And not that Avery Williamson's horrible, but somebody's going to pay Williamson like he's a legitimate middle linebacker in the NFL, and then they're going to find out that he can't cover tight ends or running backs.
Yeah, if you can't, if a guy doesn't play on third down in the NFL, if he's not a three-down linebacker, he's not a big money guy.
Right, like they have this as number two on the list, but re-signing Josh Klein and Avery Williamson to me is not what puts you over the top against the Patriots.
No, I mean, that's you know, according to that, you're just kind of hoping to stay where you've been.
Number three, cut DeMarco Murray. After a Pro Bowl season in 2016, the bottom fell out for Murray in 2017 as he posted nearly identical numbers to the disastrous season he struggled through with Chip Kelly in Philadelphia. The Titans can wipe Murray's $6.5 million cap without incurring any dead money. By the way, that's totally what John Robinson planned on doing when he signed the deal the way he signed the deal. But anywho, the 30-year-old won't be getting that much on the free market, which might make a pay cut amicable on both sides, but the Titans need to turn their starting job over to Derrick Henry. Number three, cut DeMarco Murray. Your thought on that idea?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't cut him. I would try to re-sign him. And once again, he may not be interested in a pay cut. And if he's not, then I think you let him go out and experience the world. And he may realize that, you know, I can get more money out here, or I need to go back and be with the Titans. Or even if the money's equal, you know, why would you go someplace that you don't know anything about if you can stay with the Titans? But I know how that works with some of those guys. So I wouldn't just cut him. I would try to restructure him, see if you can get some kind of deal done with him. You know, cut him down and then give him incentives to build it back up.
You've been big all offseason. Whenever we've talked about DeMarco and Derek, you've been very big to – because I think they're just going to cut DeMarco and move on. I think they're going to try to come to a pay cut, but DeMarco's not going to take it because DeMarco's going to think he's DeMarco Murray. He's going to say, look, I was the leading rusher in the AFC 2 years ago. I had a bad hamstring, and that's why – and then I hurt my LCL, and that's why – I was never the same that I was the year before, but just because I'm 30 years old doesn't mean I'm not a good back, so you're not going to pay me 6.5. Well, I'll get $5 million somewhere else. And then he's going to go look, and he might not get that from anywhere else, but he's not going to take a pay cut from you. That's just my opinion, and I don't know DeMarco, and I don't –
I've seen it before. I mean, that's – you know, they let their pride get in the way. And the bottom line is, if you're going to – if I'm going to pay you $4 million – and you're going to go out there and get $4 million to play for Tampa, I mean, which, why would you change? Mm-hmm. I understand why they would, you know, because of pride factor and ego and all that kind of stuff. But from a monetary standpoint and from a, you know, chance to win and all those kinds of things, I mean, it'd be foolish to make the move. But I would understand, you know, why somebody would.
Like, what's a better team that you can get more touches on than the Titans? If you're DeMarco Murray, like where you can get paid, because even the good teams, the cash, they're not going to do that. Number four, ESPN.com on their list. Negotiate an extension with Taylor Lewan. With two deserved Pro Bowl appearances during his first four seasons in the league, Lewan is going to reset the tackle market with his new deal. The most lucrative extension handed out to a tackle coming off of his rookie deal is still 5 years, $68 million that Trent Williams signed with the Redskins before 2015, which guaranteed Williams $30 million at signing and paid him more than $42 million over the first three seasons. Lewan will likely become the first tackle in the league to top $15 million per season, and his new deal could be a five-year, $75 million pact with $45 million paid out over the first 3 years. Your thoughts on negotiating an extension with Lewan this offseason and when you hear those numbers, 5 years, 75, 45 guaranteed?
You know, I think it's the same thing. I mean, you're not going to lose Taylor. You want to keep Taylor, and you're going to try to sign him for whatever it is you have budgeted. It depends on, you know, how much money I have this cap year, how much money I have next cap year, and, you know, Vin Marino and those kind of guys are the only ones that really know that. But there may be such a thing, and I'm just throwing this out. You know, maybe we've got $50 million worth of cap room this year, But next year, maybe we have $80 million worth of cap room. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's the case, you might be better off not signing him, you know, franchising him, and then working out a deal after that. But we just don't know what those numbers are. But there's no doubt you want to re-sign Taylor, and there's no doubt it's going to be very expensive.
I think John Robinson made it clear he's planning for the Lawan and Mariota extensions when he signed Logan Ryan, probably overpaid at $10 million a year for Logan Ryan, but he signed him to a three-year deal. Because when Logan's deal is up, you would hope Adoree is ready to step in as the number one corner, hands down, and so forth, drafting a pass rusher fifth. What do you say on that one?
Yeah, I mean, I think I would even move that up the scale a little bit. I mean, I think that's more important than some of those other things. But I mean, it's we need to bring somebody in here that's going to be a factor as a pass rusher. And the truth is, I mean, by the time we get all the franchise tags out and all that kind of stuff, some of those pass rushers that we're looking at now are not going to be available.
Yeah, DeMarcus Lawrence is going to get franchised.
Yeah,
by the Cowboys.
So, I mean, as soon as that happens, he's not available, so you eliminate that name. And where do you go from there? I mean, that's probably going to be the case. Again, in the NFL, pass rushers are just, they're like quarterbacks. You know, to get a legitimate guy, it's almost impossible to find. So if you can find somebody or you have somebody that you really like, you're going to make sure he does not leave unless he's just really a bad guy.
Well, and I think about it too. Like, you look at the premium positions. Take the last 3 years. The Titans at the premium positions have really spent a lot of resources. And the premium positions are your tackles, your corners, your quarterback, and your pass rushers. Well, they drafted Marcus in 2015. The next year they drafted Conklin to go with Lawan. So now you've got your tackles. This offseason, they invested heavily in Jackson and Logan Ryan. So now it's pass rusher time. And that's where they are. But those are the premium aspects of the team, and I just look at the progression of it. But you're right. They got to draft a pass rusher, and they got to draft one that can get to the quarterback.
Yeah, and that may be really, really hard. I mean, we don't know who's going to be out there in unrestricted free agency. And if that's the case, you know, if it's really, really hard, then – you know, all of a sudden you look at trades, and trades are maybe an option.
So we're starting this hour on the Titans. Your thoughts, 615-737-1025. Those are ESPN's five things that the Titans need to do. I, by the way, would only have one of those on my list, and that's draft a pass rusher, which would probably be first or second, and then improve the wide receivers would be number two. But that's just me. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your thoughts on the Titans. We're going to start this hour on the Titans. Plus, I heard Bill Polian say something absolutely ridiculous.
Yesterday.
Oh, no. I actually, him playing receiver, I'm fine with. But we'll get to that. And we'll take your questions on Twitter. We're trying to, work Twitter in a little bit more. At Jared Stillman on Twitter. We are live at HQ Beer K downtown, where once again the Predators are playing Detroit tonight. We'll have the watch party as the puck drop is at 6:30, and the drawing for those premium center ice lower level tickets for Thursday night's game is at 7:45. So register to win those tickets and then go to the game Thursday night. I'm going to the game Thursday night, so everybody get excited. 615-737-1025. It's Jared and the GM right here on ESPN 1025 The Game.
We have Bill Polian to give us some answers. So Bill, where are we in terms of Andrew Luck's status?
Well, in talking to every decision maker in the organization, they make it clear that Andrew's rehab is coming along as scheduled. It's right in line with what Dr. Andrews outlined at the end of the season when he went down there to see Dr. Andrews. He's on schedule, and they expect that he's going to be ready to go by training camp.
Bill Polian talking to every decision maker in the Colts organization, which, quite frankly, I think we know that Bill Polian can get right through the doors to the Colts decision makers without a doubt.
No, I would imagine.
And they all say Andrew Luck will be ready by week one.
Yeah.
No, I'm not buying it. I don't believe Bill Polian. Now, I take that back. I believe Bill Polian was told by the decision makers in the organization that Andrew Luck's fine or gonna be fine or whatever. But I don't actually believe that that's true. Well, because that would be like the Titans telling you something that's just blatantly not true, but they want it to be true, and then you come on the air and say, hey, I've talked to the Titans, and they've said, because my guess is Polian's like you, and Polian's not going to go on TV and say that if they don't tell Polian to say that.
And I think, you know, the part that's interesting, he said rehab after the surgery. I wonder if that's another surgery. Because if it's the initial surgery, he's been rehabbing for a year and a half. I mean, there, I don't know, other than amputation, I don't know what kind of surgery you have where you have to rehab for a year and a half. It's taken him forever. So there is something much more to that whole thing than just, and I don't know what kind of surgery it was, but than just surgery. I mean, there was a surgery and a re-injury or an infection or a mishap or he hurt it. Remember when he started throwing the ball for like 2 weeks? I don't know if he re-injured it then. I don't know what it is, but my gut tells me there's something more to that than we'll ever know.
I think that's why McDaniels didn't take the job.
I don't. It wouldn't surprise me.
I mean, Teddy Bruschi alluded to that a couple weeks ago on TV, and we know where Teddy's sources are coming from, and we know where Bill's sources are coming from, and I almost feel like the Colts want you to believe Andrew Luck's going to play, even though they're probably in the same place we are with, is Luck going to play? I don't know. But they don't want to say I don't know, because then they look like a hapless franchise. But they need to figure it out, because if Luck's not going to play, you have the third pick in the draft, you might be able to get the first quarterback. And if you love Darnold or Rosen or one of those guys, you need to draft them, because there's no guarantee this guy's coming back.
Yeah, well, and this is going to be really, really tough for them, because if they do draft one of those guys, then they're in fact admitting that he's not, that there's more to it, and that we're not expecting him to come back. And then what happens? Well, then your season tickets go to heck, and you know, now all of a sudden you're playing in front of, you know, 15,000 guys. So I don't know. That's a real predicament. And the owner came out, you know, last year,
said
prior to the
one.
Season. You know, he'll be ready. You guys go buy all those season tickets. He'll be ready to go, I promise. And he never played a snap. So we've been through this before. We've seen this. Been there, done that. You know, we need now to see proof.
Jared and the GM are live out at HQ Beercade. Once again, watch party for the Preds game tonight downtown. Let's go to the phones. Robert is in Nashville and is up next on Mariota. What's up, Robert?
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call today.
Good to talk to you, Robert.
Oh, good to talk to you guys, too. I was listening to you guys again about the Titans situation. And, I look at Marcus, and look at how he played last year, how the inconsistent, even though as far as when he's trying to throw the ball without the huddle, he's still inconsistent. And then, you know, for Mike Vrabel to take this gamble, to me, it's almost like the Josh McDaniels situation. Now, my question is this. Mike is going into this thing with Marcus. Is there like a time limit that they can, you know, cut out Marcus' contract and, you know, bring somebody else in, or is he just going to be stuck?
So you're not a believer, I take it, Robert. You're not a believer in Mariota as a quarterback.
I don't know about old Marcus. I like him as a guy. You know, as a player, but not as a good player, but he's a good person. But he's just
Robert, what was your biggest complaint about the team last year?
My biggest complaint was Mike. He was definitely my biggest complaint. And,
so don't you think that the new coach, because you hate, this was you, not me. I liked the old coach. You hated the old coach. Do you think the new coach can come in and coach him better?
I don't think the coach is going to be able to come in and just, get Marcus to where he needs to be. Because of the relationship in their quarterback and their coach, it hadn't been long, so it would take a while. And Marcus is, like I said, Marcus, he just to me, this is his third year, and he just to me, he's just not gelling. I don't know if it's 15 or wherever it is. But he kind of reminds me of what's the guy that used to play? Oh God, what was his name? He was a running quarterback, but he didn't do so well.
There's a lot of those. Robert, I appreciate your call as always. Floyd, your thoughts on Robert's concerns about Mariota?
Well, I mean, I think we all have concerns after last year. You know, I think it was – but again, in my opinion, you're looking at it and you're saying, okay, what were the concerns? Why were there concerns? What were the reasons that he didn't play as well as he did the year before? And in my mind, I mean, it all boils down to, you know, the offense. And I think we've said 100 times, I mean, he's just an image of the offense. Offense struggled. We struggled. 2 years ago, offense played really, really well. Marcus played really, really well. And so I think now we need to get it up to speed so that we can let Marcus go ahead and mature into that kind of guy that can, in fact, you know, pick up part of this team, put it on his shoulders, and go ahead and win a game or two.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I look at it and I just say, I thought Marcus was a lot better than people give him credit for. Marcus had some really good games last year. Something I want to do at some point is go over how many good games he had last year, how many bad games he had last year, and how many games did he have where it was like, well, he could have played better, but it wasn't a bad game. And I think you'll be surprised at how many good games he had last year. The game at San Francisco, he went toe-to-toe with Jimmy G. And if Delanie Walker doesn't fumble the football or drop a touchdown, or if the defense can get a stop at the end of the game, or they don't call that stupid run up the middle, then we will look back at that game and say Marcus went to San Francisco and outdueled a $30 million quarterback. Now, the week before that at Arizona, Marcus was terrible. So there were some bad games and there were some good games. And I think when we look at it, and I just had this idea to look at all the good games Marcus had last year. I bet you when it all boils down to, he will have more good games than he did bad games last year. But the so-so games will probably lead the pack.
Yeah, I mean, again, it's like the San Francisco game in my mind. I mean, if you're 2 years ago, Marcus would have won that game.
No.
Two years ago.
He can't catch the ball in the end zone like
Delanie
Walker.
It doesn't make any difference. He would have found a way to get down there, get in the red zone, score a touchdown. He would have done something to win that game. Now, I agree with you with the Cardinals. I mean, that game was just awful. He was awful. Everybody was awful. I mean, that was an awful game. But I think that's in my mind. When I look at him, there's going to be a number of those games, which are, you know, if you were able to do this as a second-year guy, then you should be able to do it as a third-year guy. And yet, I mean, on top of all that, I think Marcus led the league in fourth-quarter comebacks last year with five.
I take that San Francisco game. And remember last year when they beat the Bears? 2 years ago, they beat the Bears in Chicago, and the Bears dropped like four passes in the end zone at the end of the game.
Right.
I think that's the same type of game, where if the Bears catch the ball in the end zone, they win. Marcus had a good game that game, but it's all about whether or not the Bears catch the ball. It has nothing to do with Marcus at the end. And I think the San Francisco game is the same way. Delanie drops the ball. Delanie fumbles the ball. Adoree Jackson drops an interception in the end zone that ends the game. They call a shotgun run on third down and two that gets stuffed, where if they get a first down, they win. Marcus had a great game. I think they're kind of the same in that regard. Of like, Brady won his fourth Super Bowl, and everyone's like, four Super Bowls for Brady. He won it because Malcolm Butler jumped a route, jumped in front, caught the ball. He lost this Super Bowl because Malcolm Butler was on the bench. So I kind of think that sometimes we get too dialed in. I know what you mean by saying.
Yeah, I mean, Tom threw for 500 yards.
Right, and they still lost.
I mean, what?
Which is my point about Marcus at San Francisco.
But, I mean, Tom could not have done more. I mean, you throw for 500 yards against anybody and you lose, it's not your fault. They lost. And I would say the same thing about Marcus or Tom or anybody.
615-737-1025 is the phone number, 615-737-1025. So I think it's no secret that there are some Preds fans out there that are very disappointed or not disappointed. That's the wrong word. I'm disappointed in them, but they don't like me. Well, they think they got me on one, but we'll get to that next. It's Jared and the GM live from HQ Beercade downtown where we're hanging out. It's right here, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Puck is tipped away, brought in by Forsberg, trying to get around the D, retrieves the puck, put it in front for Johansson, and a score by Victor Arvidsson. It was tic-tac-toe, but it wasn't a clean tic-tac-toe. As we're nearing the halfway point of regulation with the Predators up a goal. Fed right in front. There you go for the Frosty. Beautiful backhanded feed. That was given by Forsberg to Arvidsson right in front. The Senators lost attention, and the Predators have a 4-2 lead.
Victor Arvidsson had two goals last night. Floyd, he's the first Pred to 20 goals on the season this year. And boy, Preds fans were giving it to me last night.
Because
last season when Arvidsson signed his 7-year contract extension at 4.25 coming off of one good season, I said, are we sure you want to go 7 years here? You know, 7 years at 4.25 is a big commitment now. And they took that to sound like I said, don't sign him to an extension. I never said that. I never said, don't sign him to a contract extension. I was skeptical of the length, and honestly, I still am skeptical of the length at 7 years on the contract. I'm not saying Arvidsson's a bad player. He's a good player. But everybody last night was, see, Stillman, you idiot. You said Arvidsson can't play. You said that they should. I didn't say that. I said 7 years is a long time for a guy who's had one good season. And I'm not trying to rain on Arvidsson's parade now. 20 goals, that's great. I'm happy. But again, in 7 years, is Victor Arvidsson going to be this productive? Is he going to have two line mates that are as good as the two line mates he has right now? Now, I guess he probably will because they're both under contract for a long time. But you see the point that I'm trying to make here. And yet people just think that I said that he's no good. I didn't say that. And I'll say this too. Last year in the playoffs, Arvidsson is the perfect example of how guys in the NHL don't play as hard in the regular season as they do in the playoffs. Because when you were in the regular season last year, Arvidsson scored 30 goals. Where'd he go in the playoffs? Well, the other team started playing harder. So that's why I love his energy. I love all those things. But I'm not everyone tweeting me last night, see, Stillman, you idiot, he scored 20 goals. You dummy, I can't believe you. You would. Again, 7 years is a long time, guys.
7 years is a long time in any sport, but especially a contact sport. Now, his age is really good. His health has been good. All those things are really, really positive. And I don't know how many hockey players have their careers ended by injury. There may be a lot. I don't know of them.
Concussions can really get you, but, yeah, I know what you mean.
But, you know, in the NFL, for example, we know, you know, it's, you just can't really sign guys to – to 7-year contracts because the risk of injury is so high that it's, you know, you end up losing on almost all those deals. So I mean I would agree with you, 7 years is a long time. I think, you know, it's all back to you know, what they've done with a lot of these young guys. And this has kind of been, you know, Poyle's method. He gets a young guy that he likes. And, you know, he wants to tie him up for a long time, 7 years. And in order for you to take a young guy and lock him up for 7 years, you got to pay him some money now.
Well, but the difference is David's usually jumped out in front before the guy gets to free agency. The problem was Arvidsson had his first productive season the year going into free agency. So, like before, if you had signed him to, like, the same two, what was it, 6 years, $2 million for Cal Yarncroke, fine. I like that. That's fine. I'm okay with $2 million. But at 4.25, you're like, I think you've got $4 million in cap space now. In a couple of years, Fiala comes up, Soros comes up. Now all of a sudden, you got to start trimming fat. And you've got Arvidsson locked up for 6 more years after this one. And is Arvidsson a game-changing player 7 years from now? I don't know. And yet the people on Twitter last night were, Arvy's the man. He'll always be the right place in the right time because he works hard, Jared.
They're right. He does work hard. I mean, there's no doubt about that.
So does Tim Tebow.
That's right.
You know, I mean, so does There's a lot of guys that work hard that don't get seven-year contracts. And I'm not saying Arvidsson's a bad player. I'm just saying Pred fans on Twitter that think they're dunking in my face because Arvidsson scored 20 goals last night, one, don't understand the argument I'm trying to make, and two, it's like they're just trying to yell at me. It's like they get more joy out of treating me like I'm the villain or I'm the bad guy when I think I had an incredibly logical take at the time that I had the take. Even last night, Arvy scores two goals. Everybody's all excited about how great Arvy played. Listen to what Crispy says. So Lindsey Rowley asks him about what about the game Arvy had last night. Here's what Crispy said.
Crispy, you heard the guys talking about Arvy hustle, and it's not that Arvy doesn't hustle every night, but tonight was particularly crazy. I mean, this really encompasses his game.
I mean, it was a 5-2 game, but Arvy hustled, but he had a lot of other guys hustling with him. Smitty, Fiala, a lot of the guys, the team. And I like what Captain Yost said. Tonight they worked as five-man units out there, everybody clicking, going. And I think the biggest thing they did was Ottawa are a tough defensive team. They don't score a lot of goals, but they play that 1-3-1 system. Tonight the Predators broke that down early.
They
got through the neutral zone. They backed them off. They penned them in their own zone. That was one of the key elements of it. And the other key element we'll talk about later on was Pekka-Rinne.
So Crispy's asked, Crispy, what about Arvidsson? Yeah, he was fine. Everybody else was good too, but this is... Yeah, Crispy didn't even spend any time on it.
Yeah.
Look, the first goal they had, the two passes from Forsberg to Johansson were infinitely more impressive than the goal that Arvidsson had. Arvidsson is a really, really, really good role player. And I think Arvidsson right now is a great player on this team. But he's not – I'm not backing off of my take that I had. Now, look, 6 years from now, if Arvidsson's still scoring 20, 30 goals, then yeah, I'm wrong. But my thing is the length of his deal, not whether or not he helps this team win.
Right.
He certainly helps the team win. And that's the thing that, like, I'm fine with Preds fans booing me at the game or being upset with my take, but at least understand the take before you get mad about the take. So that's what I got. 615-737-1025. We got the Preds on the table. We got the Titans on the table. We're open for calls on the Preds. 615-737-1025. We'll get to your calls next as Jared and the GM are hanging out live out at HQ Beer K downtown. Once again, we got the watch party for tonight's Preds game as they take on the Red Wings at 6:30. And we'll have the drawing for those lower-level premium center ice tickets. I call them the Floyd Reese seats. At 7:45, ESPN 102.5. The game is the flagship station of the reigning Western Conference champion National Predators. Follow us on Instagram and Twitter, and like us on Facebook to keep up with everything in Smashville. Twitter at 102.5 The Game, Instagram at The Game Nashville, Facebook.com/The Game Nashville. I'm on Twitter at Jared Stillman, and apparently, I need to state this for the record: I have a blue check mark on Twitter. If you see something come from somebody else who is claiming to be me and it doesn't have the blue check mark, it's not me. If it's got the blue check mark, it's me at Jared Stillman. And on Instagram at the Jared Stillman, where I got to see the Preds' brand new bunker suites at Bridgestone Arena. And that's all my Instagram story. So go follow me at the Jared Stillman on Instagram and check that out as well. Jared and the GM live from HQ Beercade downtown. It's ESPN 102.5 The Game.
How do you guys carry this momentum over into Detroit in what could be called a redemption game?
Just play the same way. I think the last game against Detroit, I thought we played a good game. Wasn't the result we wanted, but we have more of that attack mentality than the games before. So we got to do the same thing. They're a fast team, and it'll be a tough game.
That was Roman Josi yesterday on the TV broadcast. Tonight, I think it'd be nice if you just blow out Detroit like you blew out Ottawa last night. That's kind of how I feel. Tonight's game. We're live out at HQ Beercade downtown, Preds Detroit tonight. We got the watch party, and we're giving away those tickets. I promise, right to the phones, and right to the phones we go. Adam is in Clarksville, and he's up next. What's up, Adam?
Hey, buddy. All right, so actually, I was following your Titans take. I just decided to wait because I've been thinking about this. I want to see what you had to say about it. If you look back at this season, because I know Vrabel's going to want to come in and do things his way. There's going to be a lot of changes as far as schemes and all that. I was talking to you several times during the season about that offensive line, and I think we agreed on the poor play of that offensive line and how crazy 1 year can make for that team, because that was supposed to be our big solid point was our offensive line. So I wonder if it's not so much we need to find weapons for Marcus as much as it is we just need to make sure that we're focused on our offensive line. Like, that needs to be the entire focal point, if you ask me, because when they were playing well, we were playing well. We had a lot of momentum with that team. But in the playoffs especially, they made New England look like a really good front. They were killing him with three and four people.
Adam, I appreciate your call. Floyd, what do you think about the offensive line, Adam, saying that needs to be the priority and not the running backs or the receivers or something else?
Well, I don't think there's any doubt, but the offensive line has to play better. I think, you know, when you look at – this is the way I look at it. The starting five that we had this year are the same exact starting five we had last year. Mm-hmm. And they played totally different. So how much of that is the player? How much of that is the scheme? How much of that is coaching? I mean, you have to figure all that out. I think that the offensive line, there's no doubt it helps a quarterback, and it's really, really important. But in this scheme, I'm not sure the offensive line isn't equally as important with the run game. That is, they have got to open up holes so the run game gets going. If the run game gets going, now you can you use your play-action pass. You can do all of those kinds of things that really, really help your quarterback and help your receivers. I think we saw Marcus this year too many times get caught staring down a receiver, get caught, you know, holding on to the ball too long, doing some of the things that he didn't do the year before. And I think that wasn't necessarily the offensive line he was concerned about as much as it was the where's the receiver going to be. And if he doesn't know exactly where that receiver is going to be, then the tendency is to wait. You know, you're going to hold it. You're going to make sure, because you can't throw an interception. It's going to cost you the game. So now you're waiting, you're waiting, you're waiting, and pretty soon protection breaks down, and boom, the quarterback gets hit or he's forced to throw an errant ball or whatever it may be.
So what do you have to do about that? Does that mean go spend a lot of free agent money on guards in the center or draft people? Or what do you do to make it better?
I think that we need to improve the guard play. One or the other, or both. I don't think there's any doubt about that. But I think the center and the tackles would be fine. But I think we need to improve the receiver play. And I'm hoping that we can do that with coaching and scheme and some of those things. Now, I might be looking at it through rose-colored glasses. I'm not sure. But if the we've seen Matthews play and play pretty well. We've seen Decker play and play pretty well.
Well, Decker's not even signed for next year. I don't think they're bringing him back.
I know, which wouldn't surprise me at all. We haven't seen the young guys come along, and that's where the problem is. Now, they're going to get Sharp back. Is that going to help? Yeah, you know, I guess it'll help. It gives Marcus another reliable guy, somebody he feels good about throwing the ball to. But if those two young guys can't come back and be the difference, you know, if they can't ignite the entire group, which, you know, I'm a little suspect about, then, you know, you're kind of where you are here with a couple of those young guys getting a little bit better. I mean, I'm not sure it's going to be significant enough. That's why I keep saying, you know, we need another something, another that will help them all, you know, light a fire behind them all. I mean, and Harry Douglas must be a great guy, but Harry Douglas ain't the answer. You know, that's the issue. So we've got to do something to make that group a lot better to help Marcus.
So you actually disagree with the caller then, because the caller says, you know, everyone talks about it, receiver, but we've got to focus on the line,
right?
And you're saying no, got to focus on receiver and not on.
Well, I think the receivers not being what we expected affected Marcus, which affected the offensive line, which made both look worse than they did the year before, for sure.
I think they just need to find a great offensive skill player, like a great running back or a great receiver. So if you can draft Chris Johnson this year, even though you've got Derrick Henry on your team, but if you can add like what Chris Johnson was when he came to the Titans, if you can get that player, you're good to go. If you get a great wide receiver, whether or not Davis becomes that, although hate to break it to you, I don't see that happening. But if you get a great receiver, then you're fine. They just need one great offensive player. They don't have other than Taylor Lewan, who's not a skill player. They don't have one great offensive skill player. That's what they – I don't care where it comes. I don't care if it's running back. I don't care if it's receiver. I don't care if it's tight end. Like, Delaney's a good tight end, but is he Travis Kelce or Gronk? No. So, I just think they got to go find that one kind of guy. Can I get my Olympic takeout?
Sure.
We'll go into, like, deeper thing on this. I hate the Winter Olympics. I mean, I used to kind of like it because of hockey, but I watched the USA hockey game last night. We have a bunch of nobodies out there. Like, nobodies. You talk about this being like, hey, these are the best athletes in the world that are competing against each other, and I'm watching it, and I'm watching the number one, like the Stanley Cup final crew for NBC, break down a game where I feel like it's a double-A hockey game. I feel like that's minor league hockey.
That's about what it is.
And you want me to be excited about that?
Well, they're all amateurs.
No, they've got guys that have played on like 8 different teams in the NHL, like 40-year-old guys.
Not the United States team.
Yes.
Who?
Well, we had this one guy, Wisniewski, out there or whatever last night, can only play on the power play, can't play only because he can shoot. And Pierre or somebody was like, in 2010, he played on 4 different teams in that season. I'm like, what? We got, like, retired NHL players out there. Like, I think legitimately Hal Gill could play on the USA men's national
team. Well, I don't – I mean –
No offense, Hal.
Hockey is the least of my favorites. I mean, I don't enjoy that at all.
But you like the slalom.
Oh, any of those. Downhills, the slaloms. I watched ice dancing last night. It's phenomenal what they do.
So why don't you watch the X Games when they're on and they do stuff like that? They do skateboarding. It's the best skateboarding in the world.
I do watch some of the X Games.
Really?
Yeah.
Holy smokes.
But
But
the X Games aren't going on for the world championship. I mean, that's the difference to me. These guys, and we've talked about this before. I mean, the amount of effort they put into what they're doing is off the charts. And I respect and admire that so much. And for them to put it all on the line for one run, and you're going down a hill at 85 miles an hour on the edge of a pair of skis, and you're going to lay it all out there just to see if you can get a medal. Not even, you'd love to get the gold, but bronze would be great. We'll take the bronze. I mean, it's just incredible to me. I think the guts and the dedication and the ability, skill those people have, it's just incredible.
I cannot wait till the Winter Olympics are over.
I know. You've got to get to women's basketball.
615-737-1025. 615-737-1025. You've got a problem with women's basketball athletes? You know that is an Olympic sport, right?
Oh, yeah. I've seen that, too.
So it's not an Olympic sport?
I'm not saying it's not. I have no idea. I'm not going to watch it.
But you love the Olympics.
Oh, I do.
You can't love the Olympics and then laugh at a sport that's an Olympic sport and then say it's an Olympic sport.
I watch the Olympics to see the best in the world. When I watch the Olympics, I want to see the best in the world. And in hockey and in basketball, it's not the best in the world.
Oh, it's the best in the world in basketball.
No.
Our team is like LeBron and Kevin Durant.
Fine.
Who's better than those guys?
WNBA.
Well, it's women's basketball, though.
That's women's basketball.
Right, like there's a women's sport in everything in the Olympics.
No, WNBA, the women's professional basketball.
Right.
Okay.
I'm listening.
They would be better, a team of those, whoever the best in the world would be.
No, the USA team would kill a WNBA team.
Okay.
You do realize WNBA players play in the Olympics, right?
Right.
So they're the best WNBA players are on Team USA.
Right. But when you take two from this team and two from that team and two versus whoever the best in the world is on that one team, I would contend that team that has practiced together for 2 or 3 years or whatever, however long they're together, would be better than a team that was thrown together for however long they've been together.
You think, like, right now, if Raptors and you were to put the Toronto Raptors up against the U.S. men's basketball team of Durant, LeBron, Steph, Draymond, basically a combination of Cleveland, Boston, and Golden State, you think Toronto would beat that team?
I'm saying the Warriors would beat that team, whatever team you just threw out there.
Well, it's impossible because half the men's basketball team is basically the starters of the Warriors.
Yeah, that's my point. The point is that team is going to be better than all of those pieces thrown together because they've been a team for three years, whatever.
So you only care about individual sports in the Olympics?
I care about people that want to be, yes. Well, no, I mean, bobsled and things like that. I mean, those are two more than one person.
But there's no professional bobsled league.
No, that's why they're the best in the world. And they come from literally every country in the world, and they get on a little sled that they've been practicing for 4, 8, or 12 years to go down this run at 85 miles an hour and try not to hit the walls or flip over. Yeah. I mean, it's
615-737-1025, 615-737-1025. It's Chair to the GM live from HQ Beer Cade on ESPN 102.5 The Game.